I was coming from Montgomery. I had my guitar on my back. When this stranger stopped beside me in an antique Cadillac. He was dressed like 1950, half drunk and hollow-eyed. Say, it's a long walk to Nashville, would you like to ride? I sat down in the front seat, turned on the radio. Them sad old songs coming out of them speakers was solid country gold. Then I noticed the stranger was ghost white pale when I asked him for a light. I knew there was something strange about this ride. He said, "Drifter, can you make folks cry when you're playing sign? Have you paid your dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend them guitar strings? Boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? If you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride."
Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. Going to be doing some fun stuff today, Les, although not necessarily on the show. Yeah. Don't wait, don't hit the stop button yet. We will, I promise. There'll be some fun stuff on here. But I'm talking about what Les and I are going to be doing a little later today, on Friday, as we record this morning. Les, headed up to the Monster Factory.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be great. I'm going to enjoy the hell out of the weekend. They're going to have a show. And you know, for anybody that's paying attention, and not because I'm going there, if I'd never been there, if I didn't know Danny Cage or had never worked there, I'd still say, you know, that poster that they made for this the show Saturday and everything, very professional, creative, artistic. I thought, damn, you know, why aren't all the independents doing that? And of course, probably part of the reason that Danny's operation is more successful than the average bear is for the very reason that he works at it. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. A great bunch of kids. We're doing a Q&A this evening. And you can still, again, you got to 1 o'clock this afternoon to sign up if you haven't signed up already. Show train all day Saturday, show Saturday night, and train Sunday. And then they put me back on the bird around 5-something Sunday afternoon, and I'm headed home, by golly. I'll be in the air while you're watching Hell in the Cell.
Well, you'll be in the air while Hell in the Cell is on the air. I can't promise you I'll be watching it.
Okay, I got you.
I'll get around to it eventually, I think, at some point, maybe. But one thing I knew we have to get around to a little later on is our predictions for what's going to happen at Hell in the Cell.
Yes.
We've got some mailbag questions we want to get to as well. But I do want to touch upon this thing that you sent me. And I want to, first of all, say hello and thank you to everybody who's checking it out today on the Freeloaders, as Super Chico likes to call you, with love, of course. Folks, this show is completely free today as part of one of many shows. In fact, approximately 15 or so. Available at WrestlingObserver.com or F4WOnline.com. Either address will get you there. We do this each and every week, Les and I, pretty much on Friday mornings. It's our ritual, but it's one of 15 different radio shows you can get on the site if you become a subscriber. And there's over 7,000 hours worth of audio shows in the archives. Never mind the whole thing with the archives for the Wrestling Observer newsletter and Figure Four Weekly. So much value for your money, and you can get a subscription for as low as $9.99 a month. And Les, one of the things that we've covered in great detail on a previous show, but I do want to touch upon a couple of these things here again today because it's worthwhile and it's awesome, and it keeps us from having to talk too much about Hell in the Cell, is this card that you forwarded me from the Cincinnati Gardens on a Saturday night, March 30th, 1963, which was up on Facebook. Tell me a little bit about this.
Wow. Yeah. That, my friend, I was 22 years old. And talk about one of the shortest trips I'll ever go to work. That would have been it because, you know, I the house I'm sitting in right now is the house I was living in at the time. And we're probably 20 minutes from Cincinnati Garden. But, you know, I had forgotten all about this. And Jimmy Compton, who's uncle was Chief Kit Fox, who was a guy I bought tickets to watch wrestle, posted this thing, and I had forgotten all about it. but son of a gun, what a hell of a card. Looking at the lineup, the fact that I was on the card, no matter that I opened the show, the hell if it's in the building. I would have been proud to have carried the jackets for most of these guys. I worked with Atura Mayaka. Don't ask me. I don't remember him, honestly. I do not remember him. The next matchup was Moose Evans, who a kid, a big guy, who is sort of a lumberjack gimmick, I guess. Worked around the country some. I don't know. He might have been used as a top guy at somebody's right at this point in time in 63. Was just kind of getting his feet wet too, but he was big, so he was going to be pushed. He had size. He was supposedly against Oscar Verdun. I see that's been scratched out, meaning I don't know that Verdun didn't show or whatever. Verdun was a journeyman, a big, nasty looking heel who I remember buying tickets for, when I was very young. I mean, like 10, 12 years old. The extra attraction, Heinrich von Bronner, which was, obviously the von Bronner name. I don't remember who used that name. Of course, at the time, the von Bronner twins, managed by Saul Weingroff, Kurt and Carl, were a big attraction in many places. But he was against another gentleman who definitely should need no introduction, Carl Gotch. And Gotch, of course, one of the tough shooters of all time, was a big baby face when he first came in for Al Haft. Of course, this card at Cincinnati Gardens was a Jim Barnett promotion. It must have been German night. Another special feature, Hans Schmidt, Guy LaRose. Again, when I first started watching wrestling, was one of the biggest stars on television. Against Johnny King. And I told one of the kids last night at training, I said, King was a hell of a worker. Johnny didn't have a great look. I don't know that he ever worked a main event in his life anywhere, but he was amazing to work with and a hell of a hand. Another added attraction, Dr. Big Bill Miller, a Hall of Famer for sure, a tough SOB. Older brother to one of my former tag team partners, Danny Miller, but Doc was a big star as Dr. X in AWA. He played football at Ohio State. He 50 Rose Bowl, I think, team, and was also a great NCAA Big Ten wrestler. I believe he may be one of the few losses that Vern Gagne had in the Big Ten. Was to Bill Miller, and he was to go against, actually it ended up being Kit Fox, but he was to have gone against Mark Lewin, who ended up, they actually swapped places, Lewin and Kit Fox, and we'll go into that in a minute. Fox was a gimmick wrestler, worked tag teams around here quite a bit, but he was a journeyman, wrestled all over the place. Quick story, Bill Miller had a reputation as having a hell of a temper, and I remember the first time I had the opportunity to wrestle Bill was in Huntington, West Virginia, and I was told I was going to work with Bill Miller, and I was young, here, 22 years old, a bit nervous, and when he came in and walked up, he said, "I understand you're a Buckeye." For those of you who don't know, we Ohioans are Buckeyes. Go Buckeyes. Anyway, I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, we Buckeyes have to take care of one another." And I took a big sigh of relief, said, "Thank you." But the story is Bill was a big guy and quite a bit larger than me at that point because I was still trying to put some decent size on. I was around 200 pounds probably, but actually, needed more size. But he took me out there and made me look like $1 million before, I ended up putting him over. And Mark Lewin, of course, Curtis and Lewin, a big babyface tag team in Madison Square Gardens, back in the late 50s, early 60s, to work with the Grahams, Dr. Jerry and Eddie. Mark, his brother Don Lewin, Ted Lewin, a wrestling family out of Buffalo. Hell of a worker. I enjoyed my friendship and as well as working with Mark at several different times. Tag team match. It says rematch. The Mongol. Don't ask me. I don't know. Frankie Caliber was a booker for Al Heft. When I was 18 years old, I drove to Reynoldsburg, and Frankie was kind enough to come out and talk to me, you know, and steer me towards somewhere else, obviously, because I needed some size, and I was 18 years old. I had no idea what a booker was at the time, but Caliber was a big baby face in Ohio for years, and excuse me, they and it was the Mongol and Nikolai Volkov, who was Steve Gobb, actually out of Chicago, against Caliber and another Ohio boy from Chillicothe, Leon Graham. Graham actually worked as a telephone lineman and wrestled just part-time. He had a good amateur background. But I don't know that Leon ever traveled any place. And then your semi wind up in the main event. Semi, the original Sheik, Eddie Farhat, against Mark Lewin. And these two guys, as the years went on, you know, battled in Cobo Hall in Detroit. I mean, just all over the place. Mark was a real good-looking young, you know, like a matinee idol-looking guy who later went on to do the Purple Haze thing with Kevin Sullivan. But he and the Sheik were the semifinal. And the main event was Dick the Bruiser against Lou Thesz. And the contrast in styles.
You know, it's so funny because I'm looking at it, and the one thing I wanted to say, ask you about was, like, that sounds like it would be a styles clash.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and on Facebook yesterday, David Skolnick, who's a friend of mine, said, you know, what about that match? And I said, you expect me to remember any of these matches that many years ago? My God, I don't remember. Now, one fan wrote on there that said, Thesz said in his book that Dick was a jerk and they didn't get along, and that may have been. I got along with both these people. I worked with the Bruiser numerous times for his promotion as well as for Barnett's promotion. I found Dick to be a good guy. He had a club called the Harem in Indianapolis in the 60s, and all, you know, we were all always welcomed there and you know, treated with VIP friendship. And I think I told you this story one time. We were at the Northside Armory in Indianapolis for a show. This was when Bruiser and Snyder were running a promotion, and I'm sitting in the dressing room with somebody else, and I'm thinking, damn, that motorcycle sounds like it's pretty close. Wow, it sounds like it's in the building. Well, it was in the building. It was a Bruiser's BSA. I had a Triumph at the time, and so we were comparing, and Bruce said, well, you want to ride it? We'll give it a try. And I said, really? He said, yeah, go ahead. So I took Bruiser's BSA on out on the highway and rode around for a while and brought it back. And, of course, Lou Thesz, so much respect for one of the greats of all time. Not only as a wrestler, he and I did for the Sivoldis up in New England. I guess some of those TVs are still popping up here and there. Mario is still, getting them on air different places. But, you know, Lou is a class act gentleman. And so anyway, I was 22 years old, and like I say, just the fact that I was on the show, hell, and as I posted on Facebook, I'd have been proud to carry these guys' jackets because a huge amount of these guys I bought. Well, I off the top of right now, I can tell you I bought tickets to watch Carl Gotch, Hans Schmidt, Bill Miller, Frankie Caliber, Leon Graham, the Sheik, Dick the Bruiser, Lou Thesz, so just, you know, proud to be there. And it was, you know, I'm thinking it's a hell of a card. I mean, when you're talking about the name value on this roster for that night, reserve seats, $3. General admission, $1.50. Children under 14, 50 cents.
I'm just looking at those prices thinking, my God.
Yeah.
50 cents to see Lou Thesz.
Yeah, and I don't know what the houses, you know, again, at that age, at that time, I paid little attention, if any, as to, you know, how, I just wanted to wrestle. I do know that payoff for me on a preliminary match at the Garden was somewhere 40, 50, 60 bucks, just depending, which, realized in 1963, that was a fair piece of change. There were people making that a week. I could go to, you know, sometimes if I went to Indy for TV on Saturday morning, which is 100 miles from here, and did a job for somebody on TV, you picked up, the thing back then is, in several territories, if you got your hand raised, you got less money than the guy, who was putting you over on television, the thought being that if you were getting put over on TV, you were probably being pushed in a main event somewhere so that it was going to balance out. And then a guy doing a job was probably a preliminary guy, so he got, but doing jobs for Barnett, you got 40. The guy's going over got 20. Hell, getting your hand raised in Tampa, you got nothing for television. There were guys fighting to do jobs on Tampa television. Let me lose. No, let me lose. No, I'm teasing. But anyway, I could go over to Indy and pick up 40 bucks getting somebody over on the TV, come back over here, work the Garden show, pick up another 40 or 50. And that was pretty decent. I mean, for the one day, it's 80, 90 bucks. That was, that was a pretty fair week for some people in 1963.
Now, on this card for Big Time Wrestling at the Cincinnati Gardens, I see Jim Barnett as the promoter and Balk Estes as the matchmaker. Now, you mentioned Al Haff was the major promoter in the area for a long time. Barnett come in and taken over this particular part of the country at that moment?
Well, actually, earlier than that, in the 50s, it was both promotions were running here. It was a war, but, you know, again, as a young fan, I didn't understand all that. All I understood is there's a lot of good wrestling on television and two promotions. Barnett, Al Haff, when I first started, my mom and dad and I first started going to wrestling, it was Music Hall, which is still in downtown Cincinnati and is a historical building where they still had the symphonies and that sort of thing. I went to Children's Theater there when I was in grade school. But anyway, and then there was an outdoor arena called Parkway Arena on Central Parkway. It was down, you went, walked down steps off the main sidewalk to get into there. That's where Al Haff ran, Music Hall and Parkway Arena. We go to the mat, but at one point, Haff was running Parkway Arena, Music Hall, two times a month, and Barnett was running the Garden. Barnett run the Garden the first and third Saturdays, and Haff was running Music Hall the second and fourth Saturdays. A lot of great wrestling, and of course nobody was under contract. You know, at the time everything was done on a handshake. So a lot of these guys, not just floating back and forth, but they would, maybe get a run with Haff and opposed to having to leave and pack their families up and move somewhere else, they work out a deal to go to work with Barnett. Haff was running about five states at the height of his promotion. He was running Ohio, Michigan, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Indiana. And then Barnett, ran Ohio, ran basically the same group, and at some point Haff he had been one of the biggest promoters in the country at one time and very, politically powerful and so forth. And so it was a war, but I was clueless as to what, it was just two big wrestling promotions. And, when Barnett first came in, the Shire brothers was Ray Stevens and Roy Shire, which is one of the reasons that Ray became a big star in Frisco when Roy took the promotion out there. They were tight, and so Ray was his main man in San Francisco. But it was a lot of great wrestling at that point in time. A lot of great wrestling in our area. We were blessed to see some of the best of the best. And, I was just going to told somebody here the other day, they were talking about the Back to the Future thing. I forget what year it was, but and this still may be the case, I don't know. But at one point, professional wrestling had the attendance record in Cincinnati Garden. And that match was a tag match with Wilbur Snyder and UConn Eric as the baby faces against Angelo Poffo and Bronco Lubitsch. Yeah, Bronk was actually Angelo's manager at the time. But anyway, this is, as everybody, well, or maybe everybody doesn't know. I know a lot of guys make, it's a joke that Bronk was the old referee that didn't want to get down on the mat to count, you know, on the Dallas TV. Bronco Lubitsch was a hell of a gentleman and a damn good heel. I worked many times with Bronk and Aldo Bogni as a heel team in the Carolinas. And of course, but anyway, that set an attendance record at Cincinnati Gardens. I forget what year it would have been. I don't know, maybe 58, somewhere in there. But Wilbur Snyder, UConn Eric against Bronco Lubitsch and Angelo Poffo.
Now, were you a regular in your home territory at any point during your career?
Well, I was used, you know, and actually with no, you know, nobody had a contract. Now, when Bruiser, and was running, against Barnett, Dennis Hall, Roger Kirby, and myself could both people used us, right? It was, I mean, because we weren't the featured guys, you know, we were still, basically mid-card preliminary guys. But I worked with regularity, sure. You know, we did Windsor TV. I did shows, and Johnny Doyle, excuse me, was Barnett's partner, and he ran Michigan. So, you know, I've worked in Lansing, Michigan, and Detroit, and Windsor TV, and Saginaw, and so forth, so on. Fort Wayne, Terre Haute, Napanee, Indiana, which you probably nobody else ever heard of. Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Louisville, Lexington, and so forth and so on. So yeah, I was getting, but the thing of it was, I was the local kid and green, right? So there was, you know, I should say, Gary Hart, when he was still wrestling, we did a little angle here in Cincinnati, you know, where he cut a promo on the local kid, and we had a couple matches out of that. But the thing of it was, too, I was, you know, off this, working for the Barnett office, I went out to Calgary from, you know, and came back in and worked here. And then I went to Kansas City and came back in, you know, a lot. As long as it was territory and it was a full bore thing, I was always, you know, always had a place to come home to and work and then, you know, go out to, and work other territories. To be quite honest, the last time I worked here, I was when I was in Atlanta, you know, working in the office and doing the TV with Gordon and pretending that I couldn't wrestle for a while until I finally did the two ring, Bobby Shane and I worked the angle in Macon and we did the two ring battle royal in Atlanta. But I came home for Christmas and, Les Ruffin, was helped with the booking and he had moved to Cincinnati at the time and was running Cincy and Dayton and a couple other clubs for the Sheik. Eddie had taken over that was running the area at the time. So anyway, you know, you get booked that you can write the trip off, right, for your taxes. So I, you know, came home for Christmas to be with Mom and Dad and got booked at Hare Arena in Dayton. Which has had some amazing wrestling over the last 60 years, probably. But anyway, good house. I forget what the house was, but it was a pretty good size house. I worked with one of the German guys. I don't remember who it was. But anyway, we worked mid-card. And so Les said, we'll send you your money. I said, okay. So I get back to Atlanta, and I got a check for $25. And ooh. I called Les and I said, "Is Zib? Zib was the nickname that for Eddie for the Sheik." I said, "Is Zib paying in installments now?" And he said, "No, that's the payoff." I said, "Les, not enough. You know, that's the last time I worked in this area. Just I didn't, you know." But it was kind of like, you know, he's the local kid, right? You know, you kind of be established as something and that doesn't change in some places, which is cool. I mean, I'm not saying this with animosity or I'm not mad at anybody. It's just the way it was. That was Christmas 73. It's the last time I worked the area.
Well, that match for that night in 63 was the Sheik versus Mark Lewin. I can only imagine how much blood was shed in that one.
Lord, yes.
As we open up the mailbag on this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, got a question that regards Mark Lewin here from our buddy Rick, who asks, when he looks at this year's Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame candidates, he saw two names in there, Mark Lewin and Mario Milano. Now, in Rick's home country of Hong Kong during the 70s, popularity of pro wrestling was through the roof while they were airing Australian wrestling on their television. Both Mark Lewin and Mario Milano, very popular in the eyes of all the fans in Hong Kong. Even today, when people are talking about the history of wrestling in Hong Kong, Mario Milano and Mark Lewin's names are still well-known, well-remembered, and almost always come up. Les, can you talk about either of these two gentlemen back in their day? What kind of workers were they, and how well or how big a draw were they in their day as well?
Well, Milano, I never met Mario. I know the name. I know that he was used in New York. I'm trying to think who his tag in a tag match and tags. I think WWF used him pretty extensively in tags, and he could have worked some other territories, but that's the one I remember. So a good looking guy, had some good size. I actually never met him, so I can't give you a lot on him. With Mark, I've worked with Mark off and on in so many different places. Again, this territory, we worked the Savoldi, tapings. He was doing the, Purple Haze gimmick with Kevin Sullivan, up in New England, when I was, Lou Fez and I were doing the broadcasting. And of course, Mark had a storied career. Like I said, you know, the first time I saw, realized who Mark Lewin was, Don Lewin, his brother, his older brother, all these guys, all the Lewins had the movie star looks. Don was a big baby face coming out, I think the Navy. I believe Don had been in the Navy. But anyway, he came into Ohio for Al Haft when I was still buying the tickets. And, I remember watching him. Of course, had a big run. I remember the first time I saw Mark was on the cover of Wrestling Review magazine with Don Curtis as tag team. And like I say, they did big business with the Grahams up in the Northeast. You know, for the I don't know if that's what it was called at the time, WWF. And I think we talked when we had Lance Storm on a couple of years ago. We were talking about nice compliments, and one of the nicest compliments in my life was with Marky. We were doing Windsor TV, and across the river from Detroit, which was where the Detroit TV was made. And he came in and was talking to Johnny Doyle and mentioning, you know, he'd had the flu or some illness, and he wasn't completely over it and felt kind of sluggish. And he asked Doyle who he was working with. And to this day, I don't remember who that was because it wasn't relevant to me. I just happened to be in earshot of the conversation, and so it wasn't I was eavesdropping. I couldn't help but hear it. And Mark kind of made a face and said, oh, no. And he looked around the room and said, let me have Thatcher. And for those who wouldn't know, the reason Lance and I were talking about this is it's one of the nicest compliments you could be paid by someone in your industry. Because what he was saying is, Les will take me out there. You know, sick. He will protect me. He will take care of me. And he will also get me over and make me look good. And which is the kind of reputation you want to build in this business, or you did at that point in time. And he did the Purple Haze gimmick in Florida with Kevin. And then one of the fun things I remember, when we were up in New England, I rode back to Boston with Kevin and Nancy, the late Nancy Benoit, and Mark. And we'd had a few drinks, a few beers, and Kevin wanted to show us all where he grew up in Boston. And so it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. We hadn't been to the hotel yet. And, Kevin decided when got in front of the house, he needed to go sit on the front steps like he used to. I said at 2 a.m., Kevin, people were going to call the cops, but they didn't. But, anyway, that's my, Mark is a good guy. Always enjoyed my time with Mark. One of the things that Mark used to do, I remember this, and of course, if he did it today, he would end up in jail. But, you know, when he was a single man, again, you know, had the movie star good looks on an airline, you know, used to be airline stewardesses, airline attendants, whatever the hell the name happened to be. There was a, you know, they had to be physically in shape and you know, and attractive. That was part of the deal. So Mark was never at want to look at beautiful women. But one of the things I remember him telling the story, he would call one of the attendants over and say, excuse me, would you like to stop an airline disaster? And of course, she'd say, yes. Well, then give me your phone number. If you don't, I'm going to jump out of this plane. And like I say, today that would have got his ass right. The air marshal would have cuffed him and all sorts of things. But anyway, that's the Mark Lewin that I remember. Good guy. I guess, I don't know if he's still, you know, he was living in Hawaii with his wife. I don't know if he still lives over in Hawaii or not. I have no earthly idea.
I'll take a look at that on a handy iPad here. But while we're, actually, you know what? He is not someone, and I'll refer you, if you did not listen to us doing last week's show, especially for those of you who are listening free today, if you end up subscribing, we're going to go into the audio archives and check out our show from last week where we talked about quite a few members of the members who are on the Hall of Fame, Observer Hall of Fame ballot for this year. But Mark was not someone we talked about because we were looking in the historical category, and Mark Lewin is actually under the Australian and other foreign country category. But since we're talking about him, thumbs up or thumbs down, Les, for the Hall of Fame?
Oh, yeah, thumbs up. Absolutely. And, you know, I my cut-and-paste guy sent me urine simps off the board talking about the Hall of Fame, and I agree, you know. The sad, you know, here's the sad, and when I say sad thing, if you're 25 years old and you really don't understand the history of this business, and there's so much, you know, I can't find any film of myself, you know. But, I mean, there are some old stuff, you know, like Hans Schmidt and Lou Thesz and stuff like that out there. But, you know, it's a shame that so many of these guys are worthy of recognition, worthy of enshrinement, and yet they will not get that because the history of our business has been so skewered or hidden or, you know, whatever the hell you want to call it, that they don't know. You know, that's one thing, too, and this is no reflection on David or Brian. It's nothing to do with that. But, you know, if you – who votes for the Baseball Hall of Fame? The writers, right? The ones who follow the history and who, you know – now, I know I'm – you know, I get a ballot for the Observer Hall of Fame. I have gotten a ballot for the New York, you know, the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame up in New York. Tony Villano's the curator there. But with those, you don't know who else is, and you are picked randomly. I mean, it's like I've voted for that Hall of Fame like three times, I think. But I never know a ballot's coming, and they don't tell you who else is voting. I don't know who else votes on the Observer, to be quite frank. But it would be behoove the industry to have some of the older guys, and again, maybe they do, you know, who actually understand who these people are. Because as we talked about, is AJ Styles ready for, you know, sainthood? No. Is Punk? No. Is Cena? No. And I say that with respect for all three of them. But I also say they're breathing, living, and working. Well, Punk's getting ready to do MMA, but you get my point, right? And there are so many, well, you know, I saw where Semp had listed all those tag teams that haven't been put in, and the current tag team scene is not one that I'm extremely excited about. Most of the tag teams today are entertaining, but they are not the tag teams of the Andersons and the Scots and the Assassins and so forth and so on.
Okay, so I'm looking up here both Mark Lewin and Mario Milano. Mark has a website, maniacmarklewin.com, where you can buy his book, And one of the other things I came across in the search is a column by our buddy Mike Mooneyham from last year talking about the book and talking to Mark Lewin. And as of last year, according to Mike's column, Les, he's living off the coast of Washington State, which makes it sound like he might be next door neighbors with Kevin.
Well, he's got a got an eye. Well, and who else? Lisa Moretti lives up there. She's got an island up there.
That's
too.
Right.
Yeah,
she does.
I wish I had an island. Listen, since some little girl has decided to go on that whatever it is where you get people to donate money, try to follow her dream, so she can move from Texas to Florida and try out at NXT. And as of last night, she had close to $1,000, and I was amazed at anybody, because most of the people in our business say, hey, get yourself, you know, you got to earn this. It's not something somebody's going to give you. But since it's working, I think we should put a page up. Les Thatcher is tired. He wants to retire. And
please send money.
Yeah, please send money so I can quit working. So I can go fishing or just sit back and watch television, binge watch shows or something. I don't know. Anyway.
And looking real quick about Mario Milano, who I've always heard, as you mentioned, Les, becoming a big star in Australia, but on his Wikipedia, and granted, it's Wikipedia, so, you know, proceed with caution. But believe it or not, he is listed here as a multiple-time NWA Southern Tag Team Champion. In fact, first time he won those tag titles were just a few months after that card we were talking about, in November of 1963, and his tag team partner was the fabulous Jackie Fargo.
Wow. Oh, that's right. That's right. He worked Nashville. I had forgotten about that. Yes. Yeah, he worked the Nashville territory.
Says here he was a multiple-time Southern Tag Team Champion, not only with Jackie Fargo, but with Len Rossi and Danny Hodge as his partners.
Wow, yeah. Rossi was a hell of a babyface. There's a guy who gets little recognition, was just a first-class gentleman, a great guy. I was lucky enough to see Len a couple years ago in Nashville at Scott Peel's reunion. Love him to death. He's a class act. Was an amazing babyface. He worked around the country. So he's originally from, I don't know, Buffalo, I think, or anyway, New York State, and settled in Nashville and never had to go anyplace. But he was a mainstay there and drew a lot of money there. He has a health food store there currently. And yeah, Len's a good guy. Yeah, I forgot Milano had worked in Nashville. I remember that now. He wasn't there when he had been and gone before I went to Nashville.
So how does one last question before we move on to the rest of the mailbag, which actually ties into the pay-per-view prediction game. So maybe we'll go back and forth between the two, because the questions are, the rest of them are current based. How does a guy, and you knew him pretty well in those days, Les, how does Mark Lewin, matinee idol Mark Lewin, become maniac Mark Lewin and then member of a satanic cult as the Purple Haze with Kevin Sullivan?
I give up. Kevin must have hypnotized him. You know, it's a necessity thing. It's about just... Or an opportunity comes up and you think you fit. That's one of the things that we enjoy that the kids today don't enjoy when they work for a major company, is we had say so in who we were, what we did, and how we did it. You know, at one point, Bobby Shane and I, Bobby had called Roy Shire. We were going as the Shane brothers, to San Francisco, but at the time they had their tag team set up, so it didn't happen. And Bobby took off and went somewhere, and I ended up going to Eastern Canada for Rudy Kay. But again, the thought was there, and the idea. When I think of that now, I thought, Jesus, would I have loved to go on out there with Shane to work with Pat Patterson, Ray Stevens, and tag? Oh Christ, that would have been Valhalla for damn sure, boy, to work. You know, I'd worked with Pat, obviously, in Boston when we were both kids. But, it was just you did what you wanted to do. Mark was good at that, too. Lord, he was good at that. But it was a hell of a baby face. You know, he just, we were talking, Kelly Klein, Mary Elizabeth Monroe has two names. She's one of my students. She's B.J. Whitmer's lady. She also starts this weekend with Ring of Honor. under the name Kelly Klein. And we were talking about that last night, that years ago there were some of the guys in our business had two or three names and different, using them in different places. And I said there were some guys that I'd known for years that I actually did not know their real names, they never used them or it never came up. And it's like a lot of the wrestlers, my mom and dad would be around when they would come visit me and I'd take them to the matches somewhere, or someone would come by the house or by the apartment. It was always Mr. and Mrs. Thatcher, and of course that's not their name. They learned to answer to it, or if fans saw them come into a building with me, they obviously assume, your name's Thatcher. So, but yeah, you could be versatile and be different people. Hercules Cortez was, he used several different names. Several guys, did that. But, Mark was versatile. There's no two ways about it, and a hell of a worker.
All right, I'm going to combine these two questions from the mailbag as we get into our Hell in a Cell pay-per-view predictions, which is coming up this Sunday on the WWE Network. Antonio wants to know, with ratings for Raw getting lower and no end in sight, boy, was he right, are there any elements of the show that you see as potential bright spots for a turnaround, like the New Day, Ambrose, or the Divas, or is a complete overhaul needed to gain/regain fans? And Stevie J asks, how bad does it have to get before they finally go back to 2 hours?
You know what? I the best I know, I think the 3 hours is due to USA's wishes.
Right. I
would think anyone that's sane in the WWE company would wish they could go back to 2 hours, which would be far simpler to put together. As far as do I see any bright spots? No. And I don't mean that to be the sound, the toll of doom or to make it, trying to be a defeatist. But I think it needed an overhaul. We've kind of talked about this. Everything's been done to death. Everything is so predictable. Again, if you're trying to make New Day into heels, then you don't do the trombone bit. They need to get away from the comedy. They need to restructure their, whoever it is comes out and does a 20-minute stand-up promo at the beginning, and they open with matches. Years ago, that used to be the way we opened a show, right, to hook people. Old is new. Old is new. It's like fashions, recycle. Bell bottoms come in and then they go out, and cuffs on pants come in and then it's no cuffs, and wide lapels and narrow lapels. But, here's the thing. We used to, run the video lead into Southeastern Championship Wrestling and come to, hello, I'm Les Thatcher, your host here on Southeastern Championship Wrestling today. We got a great card, so-and-so, so-and-so, so-and-so. Let's go to the ring for the opener and first action with, bam, we're in there. The ring announcer makes the introductions and we're gone. Now, we're giving the people what the sign says, professional wrestling. They're tuning in to see professional wrestling, not to hear me babble on for 20 minutes. Of course, we only had, we had an hour. But the point is, just to turn things around a little bit. I've said this for years, for the last few years. It's like this whole, when somebody comes out to save their buddy and you're playing their music and they can't leave the, they can't come until the music's played. That's as hokey and sophomoric and bullshit as anything I can think of. And I've said this to you, and I truly, now, if, for example, Cena's going to run down to save Randy Orton, and I'm just throwing out names here, okay? If Cena comes out in street clothes, pair of jeans, I know John must own a pair, although he loves his knee pads and his shorts, his baggy shorts, in jeans and a t-shirt with no music, some people in that audience will reflect on that and say, wow, that probably wasn't scripted. And that's where we need to go, period. The industry, not just WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, if Jared ever gets off the ground there too, this whole script, yes, everything, you've got to do some improvisation. You've got to make things more organic. And they're not doing that. you know? And so when I say revamp, it's you can, you know, you not fire everybody and, you know, but change the structure, change the flow of the show, change the structure, and give the people. Have you been watching Blind Spot?
I have not. Tell me about that.
You, man, I wasn't sure. You know, this lady is tattooed, you know, from head to toe, and she, you know, and they are supposed to figure out the tattoos, what's going on. So I wasn't sure. Do I really want to watch it? But I recorded the first episode. Now I am recording the series, and I will, and I am watching it, and they've hooked me. But the reason for that is that they take you, they give you just so much, and then they save, you know, you've got to come back next week, and then you've got to come back the week after that. They're not giving you the entire thing, and they add little things that you didn't think about to begin with. But to kind of lay out the story, Vic, the show opens in Times Square, and there's a big duffel bag on the ground in, on the sidewalk. And a New York City policeman walks up and said, did you see who put this here? And he's looking at you. Did you see, he's asking people, and no one seems to know. So he sees there's a tag on it, and he leans over, and it says, call the FBI. So then the scene shifts, and the FBI, they've evacuated the immediate area. The FBI guy in his hazmat suit, you know, or his bomb suit or what, comes. Well, anyway, they give you the cold opening where and the FBI gets called. Then they go to commercial, and they come back, and the guy in his bomb suit is there. And finally, as he's, you know, they're running like little machines to test to see if there's no radiation, no this, no that. And then all of a sudden the bag moves. Just a little. And what's that? And so finally the bag unzips itself, and it's this lady, completely tattooed, nude. We're now, I don't know, 10 minutes into the show, right? But my point is, they made me want to see that bag come open. Now, in our business, the show would have opened, the bag would have been there, the cop would have went and opened the damn bag, the girl in the tattoo would have jumped out and ran down the street. And the value of her and the value of that bag would have been null and void. Am I making sense?
Yes, sir, you are.
But they made me want to see that bag opened because they teased me a little bit, and they made you think, what the hell's in that bag? I mean, this is the premiere issue, of the series, right? This is the first installment. So you didn't know she was in there. It could have been anything. But each week you're getting something, you know, that's the deal. That's the deal. So I think that's what we're lacking too, and give people a pay. Now I know Cena on the pay-per-view is challenged to all comers or whatever the hell it is, and so forth. You know, but if just anybody comes out there, and this is on a pay-per-view, it means nothing. You know, if it's I don't, and I don't mean this to say like an insult to these people, but let's say it's Ziggler comes out to challenge. We just saw him Monday, you know, or you know what I'm saying. If it's somebody fresh, somebody that's coming back, somebody that we haven't seen, or some new face, then you know. But things are only as important or as exciting or whatever as you make them, and they're not making it. You know, it's just. They're walking in place. They're going through the motions. And, I don't see them getting away from the 3 hours. But one of the things I'll say for Steve about the 3 hours, and I've said, you've heard me say this, and I'm going to repeat myself over and over again, is do human interest video packages.
Oh, I got to tell you. Hold on. I got to just jump in real quick because you're absolutely right. And if you heard the Brian and Vinny show this week, you know exactly what I'm about to say. I was watching NXT this week, Les, and there was a feature on Apollo Crews, who is the former UHA Nation in Dragon Gate and Evolve in the independent scene. And it was a whole sit down, really could have been personality profile. The deal is, Crews is about to get an NXT championship match, and this is the week before his big match. So they've got a sit down piece, maybe somewhere between 3 and 5 minutes. It's him sitting down with interspersed with old family photos, some footage of him wrestling in Evolve, just talking about his life and his career, growing up, splitting time between Atlanta and Nigeria with his family and the different things that went on in his life, tearing up just at the thought of how hardworking his mom was and how much she struggled to give him and his family a decent opportunity at life, and how much he's always loved wrestling and wanted to go to WWE. And I mean, I'm looking at this piece and I'm just thinking, why is this stuff not on Monday nights?
Well, you know, and to add, yes, I agree with you. Well, you know, the thing that ESPN did with Adam Rose was far more entertaining than friggin' Dancing Rabbits, right? And it gave you substance, and our business is lacking substance. You know, it's just, I mean, it's just crazy, because if you look at other shows, you know, you take a cop show, Marisha Hargitay on Law and Order SVU. Okay, she's adopted a child, so that's become a part. She's just not shooting people and arresting people. She has another life, you know. Castle, where he and Beckett got married, and now they're kind of separated. Nobody's sure why. But it's about there's more substance, there's more depth to the character. All I know about Xavier is he plays a bad trombone. Do I care? No. Cesaro does, you know, the giant swing. Cesaro is not from America. Where is he from? Why don't we talk about it? You know, give me some substance to these people. And so instead of filling your 3 hours with the twin switch in a bad, bad, bad match, or just, you know, Barrett coming out saying, "Hail King Barrett," and which everybody said, "Hail King some friggin' body," you know, but my point is, the best television shows, like especially the cop shows, I notice, are giving you substance. You're getting depth. The character has more than one side, and professional wrestling characters don't, and they should, because that's, you know, if their in-ring performance is not especially 4-star, and I don't use stars as a rating, it's just something I happen to throw off the top of my head. Maybe you'll get hooked because you went to the same school they went to, you have the same hobby, or something like that. It comes back. Why is NASCAR so popular? Because, not because they run around in circles and turn left all the time. It's because, you get immersed in a driver, you know a little bit about them, but he drives your kind of car. You have a connection. And, I don't know any connection we have with any. You sit there for a moment, Vic, and tell me that what you watch on Monday or Wednesday or Friday or Saturday or any other friggin' day, what is your personal connection with any of these people? You may have one, but you don't know about it because they don't, on these shows, there is no personal connection. Am I right?
Yeah, substance is the right way to describe it. The analogy I was thinking of is that some people will sneer at this because it's wrestling, but it's so much more than that when you think about it. To me, wrestling used to be a place where you could get a decent meal, if you follow me here, and today's WWE is fast food.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And with a meal, you're going to sit and savor it, and
yes,
the fast food. You'll drive to go through the drive-through like Jimmy Cornette. Cuss out, grab your sandwich and scarf it down until you can get back on your cell phone and text some more, right? But yeah, there is substance. There is no substance. It's just, this whole thing with the reuniting of the Shield and Seth walked away. Wow, that would be different if nobody else had. When was the last time somebody walked away? Last week? 2 weeks ago? I can tell you, I don't remember exactly, but because I really don't care, but I know it's happened two or three or four times just this year, right?
A lot more than that.
Yeah, okay. You know, I mean, so it's like, it's laziness. It's not creativity. It's called laziness.
Only thing left on our agenda for today is to make our predictions for Hell in a Cell this Sunday. And I know you've got a workout to get to and a plane to catch.
So yes, I do.
Keep these as short and sweet as possible. Pre-show match less is Dolph Ziggler, Cesaro, and Rusev versus Sheamus, King Barrett, or excuse me,
Neville.
Ziggler, Cesaro, and Neville, yes, again, Sheamus, Barrett, and Rusev. If it sounds familiar, that's because they did the same exact match Monday on Raw. So why are we doing it again? I have no idea, except to say that.
And why are some of these guys who 5 minutes ago were main eventers and being pushed now on the pre-show?
I give up.
I do too. Anyway,
oh.
Well, it's pre-show. King Barrett has probably lost more since he's become king, hasn't he, than he ever did when he was just Barrett. I don't know. To me, a pre-show, it doesn't much matter. This, you know, the match has been seen. I'd get the baby faces over. I put Ziggler, Cesaro, and Neville over.
I agree with you. I expect that that's what's going to happen. Next match is for the tag team titles, The New Day versus the Dudleys. A lot of folks thought the Dudleys were going to win at Madison Square Garden. It didn't happen. Have they waited too long for this? Does it matter at this point? Are you ready to get rid of the Dudleys? What's the deal, Les?
Well, I think that this, how many times have we seen this match already?
A dozen, at least.
And the outcome has been?
Dudleys by disqualification, usually.
Yeah. Okay. Why change it? I mean, what? Someone may have to actually think of a finish. Hell, I wouldn't want that to happen. You know what? I said when the Dudleys are coming in, if this is all about breaking tables, I didn't have 5 minutes for it. But when I say that, the Dudleys, you know, Devon and Bubba are, you know, they're solid team, and they can, you know, they can create stories. It's not their only thing. It's not tables. I'm just not interested in seeing tables at this point in time. I don't think that's necessary. I think it's time for them to step the fuck up and kick ass and become the champions. That's what I think.
All right. So that two votes for the Dudleys. I expect the Dudleys to win this match and the titles as well. And I don't know if we should. I guess it would be unfair to kind of offer an official prediction on this John Cena thing because he doesn't have an opponent scheduled that we're aware of. I mean, I'm sure they know who's going to be wrestling Cena,
well,
but I will ask you this question instead as opposed to whether or not he'll win. Well, I guess it is kind of whether or not he'll win or lose, but he's getting ready to go on, I guess I would call it vacation for lack of a better term. We don't really know allegedly what he's going to be doing with his time off, but he won't be back until after the holidays. So if you're booking, does John Cena leave on vacation with the United States Championship?
Well, you know, if it were up to me, the answer would be no. But since he is the sacred cow, the one we pray to in WWE, my guess is he probably walks with it and sits on it. To me, I'd say, I have no idea, but I would put him with a worthy opponent, somebody who's going to test him, somebody who's going to push him. And just when everybody's starting to say, ah, hell, Cena's going to win this again, let the other guy, you know, take it and win, and then this other guy can do the Lesnar, Paul Heyman crow like they did with Undertaker for the next 2 months, and come back on the day after Christmas and work a return. That's what I'd do. But hey, what the hell do I know? My guess is the sacred cow leaves with the belt intact.
I do as well, but I'll throw out an idea, and I haven't heard anything about this, don't know anything, don't ask me, it's just a random thought, and nor am I aware that they're calling anybody new up, but Cena wins the match against whoever it is, and then is brutally assaulted by his next opponent and carted out of this place and disappears for 2 months. How about that?
That's possible. Where the hell is he going for 2 months, by the way?
I have no idea.
I don't either.
We've got an Intercontinental Championship match between Kevin Owens and Ryback. I can't imagine that Kevin Owens isn't winning this match.
Yeah, you know, here again, Ryback is a big guy, but he's to me, he's the kind of guy that needs a smaller, more mobile partner and keep him in tags because I think in terms of singles, he's quite limited. Again, it's not a knock, it's just an evaluation. Yeah, I think Owens, maybe it elevates Owens again. Owens has been, it's like he's riding the escalator of life. He starts at the top and ends up at the bottom and comes up and down and up and down. Yeah, I guess, yeah, Owens, I'll take Owens too.
For the Divas title, Charlotte versus Nikki Bella.
Please, Charlotte. I've got my fingers crossed. Nikki is not the Diva Revolution. Nikki is not the next female John Cena. Nikki has great cleavage and that, well, she's got great cleavage. And let's leave it at that.
I'm going to take Charlotte as well. For the record, I have not seen or heard anything about Nikki Bella going on vacation as well.
Ah, maybe that. Maybe she and John are running off to, I don't know, to do whatever.
Let's see. Oh, the two Hell in a Cell matches.
Yes.
Roman Reigns versus Bray Wyatt. I presume this is a win for Roman.
I think it has to be. I think they're still pounding Roman to get him over. I think there's a possibility of doing that, but I think they're going about it all wrong. Wyatt is, I think, hit his plateau. You know, he's entertaining to a degree, but the mystique and the mystery and the aura around Bray Wyatt when he first came in, I think, is now is, you know, it's just kind of the same old, same old. I think he was misused in that respect and maybe needs a rest. But yeah, I think Roman gets his hand raised here.
And the other Hell in a Cell match ties into our last question in the mailbag from Fred. Have you ever seen or been as underwhelmed, more or less, with the build? I mean, how did they manage to suck all the passion out of The Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar in a cell? I'm not sure how, but they managed to do that for me.
They did it, though, right? No matter how hard it was. Yeah. Lesnar's got, I mean, I can't see putting a strap on Mark. I don't see the, you know, I hate to see him drop two straight. Again, I didn't want to see this because I want to see him leave with his thing intact. But the only thing I see is that Lesnar's next opponent might come out and interfere in some way. I don't know, or something, but. And again, I know Dave has talked about this, and I'm going to mirror his thoughts. And what is your big match for WrestleMania?
Great question.
Right this minute, I don't see one. I mean, I don't see anything that anybody is saying. You know, WrestleMania is going to do business because it's an event. It's like the Super Bowl or the Kentucky Derby. People are going to go that aren't necessarily huge fans, no matter what it is, because it's a happening. But I don't see a match available to me that I just think, man, I can't wait to see this. You know, I got to see this.
I'm going to take Brock Lesnar.
Okay.
I kind of halfway expect The Undertaker to win, but I want Brock Lesnar to win, so this time I'm going to go against my WWE logic hat and say Brock Lesnar wins.
Okay.
Brings us to the last match, Seth Rollins versus Kane for the WWE Championship, and of course, Les, this all-important stipulation hanging in the balance, because if Kane loses this match, then corporate Kane has been booted from the Authority.
Well, I can't, you know what? I like Glenn Jacobs as a person. I think Glenn Jacobs has worked his ass off for this company. I think he's done so many goofy things that they've asked him to do, but he's done them well and made them work. He deserves a lot of credit for a lot of things. But I don't see, I can't see him as a world champion at this point. I don't see it. I don't think it's going to benefit the company or him or anybody else for that matter. And so I guess he ends up, unless they throw this out and nothing happens, he's removed from the Authority, which I assume at that point turns him babyface. He may be racing Big Show for how many turns in a decade. I don't know. It's just, this match should have never been made to begin with.
I'm going to agree with you.
You know, I can't see Kane winning this. I don't see Glenn as the world champion. Years ago, I wouldn't have questioned it today. I'm thinking, no, this is not a smart move.
I'm going to agree with you. Seth Rollins retains the title, gets a rare win, as folks have been keeping score with Brian Alvarez have noted. He's something like 3-20-something, or maybe even 3-30-something since August 3rd. So this will be win number 4 for Seth.
Yeah, well, we wouldn't want the guy as the world champion to get his hand raised too often.
No, why would you want anyone thinking he's the best?
Maybe they're doing this because of the Seattle Seahawks.
Well, they got a win yesterday. Actually, they're even with Seth now. They have 3 wins.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. But I was, of course, they didn't win the Super Bowl last year. But the year before, you know, coming off, they haven't shown very well. But anyway, yeah, I think Seth has got to get his hand raised here. I just do.
I agree with you. Those are our picks for Hell in a Cell this Sunday on the WWE Network. And I know, Les, you've got a very packed rest of the day in front of you and a flight here. So first of all, safe travels. Second of all, let us know real quick where else you can be seen if folks want to reach
when
out.
Well, in another couple weeks, I'm going to be in Rockwood, Tennessee for Central All-Star Wrestling at the National Guard Armory. That's Saturday, November the 7th. And mentioning Kelly Klein or Mary Elizabeth Monroe, she's going to be on that card as well. We're doing a small seminar, 3:30 to 5:30 that afternoon at the Armory. Bell time is 7 or 7:30, I'm not sure which. But my main reason for going down is to my dear longtime friend and former NWA referee, R.E. Mac McMurray, is being honored by the promotion and Ox Harley, the promoter. And so I'm going to be the presenter, and I'm also going to be doing color on the broadcast, on the taping of this thing. But the big thing is to honor my friend Mac for his service. He does the timekeeping for them there now. But anyway, if you're interested in joining us there, you can call Ox at 865-200-9437. And of course, I'm doing 3 days a week here at the Christian Wrestling Association warehouse in Hamilton. We train Tuesdays and Thursdays at 6 p.m. and Saturday mornings at 10. Of course, tomorrow morning, Tarek Buska will be handling the reins as B.J. Whitmer is going to be coming back from Michigan, and I'm going to be in New Jersey. So, we've got to call. You know, our kids, the few kids we've got seem to be doing well, and I'm excited, for them. And I'm excited for Kelly to get this shot with Ring of Honor and obviously open for bookings. I'm talking to Luke Hawks about something in January in New Orleans, and actually my former student Tarek Buska, who wrestled as Tarek the Great or Tarek the Legend, is being inducted into the War Ohio Hall of Fame January 30th, and I hope to be free to present him with that. That's Nigel McGinnis, and I were inducted there 2 years ago. And my very, very dear friend and former manager for my company, Brock Guffman, inducted me and presented me. We were in California, so I hope to make it up to Lima for this to War Wrestling in Respect is why the company's called War. They run a good operation. And so anyway, but you can reach me at les@epwt.com or lesthatcher@zoomtown.com, and I am open for work. Yeah, or you can send money to help me retire and get me the hell out of your hair. I don't care which.
Yes, instead of sending your pennies to Barbie, boys and girls, please send them to Les.
Yeah, thank you.
That's going to wrap up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. I'll keep a tote board and see how many donations you get between now and next week.
Probably not many.
He is the legend, Les Thatcher. My name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to spend it with us at Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, and we'll talk to you again next week.